And welcome back to Speak Up Las Cruces. For the next half hour, we're going to be talking about the Sunshine Week event that is coming up this Thursday from 3 to 4 o'clock at the NMSU Library. We have with us Dylan McDonald, who is the coordinator of the event, will be the moderator this Thursday, and Jessica Onsures from the Las Cruces Sun News, who will be one of the panelists. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having us, Walt and Jamie.
Yeah, great to be here.
Dylan, let me start with you. Can you talk a little bit, well, first of all, before we get into the topic, a little bit about Sunshine Week, what it is and why you guys at the NMSU Library feel like it's worth celebrating and bringing to people's attention every year?
Sure, yeah. For a little over 20 years, there's been a national effort to mostly put together by concerned journalists around the country to celebrate Sunshine Week, which is basically the idea that government works best when it is out in the open, and so the best disinfectant is sunshine on things. And fortunately, you know, we have a couple tools that are open to anyone here in the country to use, whether it's at the federal level with the Freedom of Information Act or here in New Mexico with the Inspection of Public Records Act, that allows us to, as citizens, to ask what it is, certain questions, what the government is doing in our name. And NMSU has hosted this event. It started before I came to NMSU in 2019, so I'd say probably at least for the last 10 or 15 years. And so librarians were, you know, concerned with information and people's ability to seek and find that information. So it seems a natural fit. And some of my colleagues before had put this together, and I've just kind of carried on that tradition. And there's a great group of folks here in the community that participated in selecting this concept. And so this year's it's formally titled "When Juvie Fails: Problems with New Mexico's Legal Code and Practice." And so, as Walt mentioned, this will be taking place tomorrow. It's open to the general public at 3 o'clock on Branson Library on campus. And so we have a panel put together of four folks from the community. We're excited to hear their voices and what they might have to say. A lot of this came about as, I guess, the concept was because of last year's mass shooting in Young Park and a concern about, I guess, how our community reacts and responds to, for lack of a better term, juvenile crime. And the speakers at this event will be Jeremy Story, the chief of police here in Las Cruces, Jessica Onsures, who's here joining us this morning, who is the news director at Las Cruces Sun News, Bill McCamley, who is a former state representative and Doña Ana County commissioner, and has a book coming out about, modern-day issues with men and boys in our society. Right. And then Mari Esther Edwards, who is an assistant professor in the Criminal Justice Department at NMSU, who specializes in juvenile offenders.
And Jessica, before we get into the topic, can you just talk a little bit about Sunshine Week and the importance of government transparency to you as a working journalist?
Sure. First of all, thanks for having me, and thanks to Dylan and NMSU for putting the panel together. I'm really excited to be joining. You know, Sunshine Week is our opportunity to talk about, as journalists, as newsrooms, how we use New Mexico's Inspection of Public Records Act, the Open Meetings Act, and the federal law, FOIA, to access information, and from that information, share with the public important details about what is happening in their community. You know, Sunshine Week, it's an effort to obviously, ironically, shed light on our sunshine laws. But I also think it's an opportunity to educate. One of the things that we have found is that there are so many people, not only within the Doña Ana County community, but in the state, who don't realize that these avenues for accessing their government and public documents are available to them. So it's extremely important to host events like this, where we get to talk about not only the theme of the day, right, juvenile justice, but how we use laws like this to tell those stories, to raise issues, to shed light.
Yeah, thank you. And I will just add real quickly that we just had an incident at the county where somebody was arrested for attending a county meeting, it seems to me. So the struggle when it comes to open meetings and open records is ongoing and continuing and always will be. Okay, so let's get to juvenile justice.
Can I bring in one kind of an update from last year's panel? Yeah. We were speaking about the effort in Santa Fe to update the Inspection of Public Records Act. And just to give a bit of an update on the last session that just ended, there was a piece of legislation that was passed, the House Joint Memorial Number 2, called IPRA Implementation Study Task Force. And from the discussions that have been ongoing for the last couple years, this memorial was passed and signed and put into effect. So there is actually going to be a task force through the Attorney General's office to kind of study the problems that have been coming out. I think last year's panel talked a lot about just how the abuses of the system, especially by out-of-state folks who are looking to monetize, particularly booking photos and arrest records and video footage from police officers. And so the task force will have representatives from obviously the Attorney General's office, the New Mexico Municipal League, the New Mexico Counties, the New Mexico Foundation for Open Government, the ACLU, and the New Mexico Press Association, along with someone who works as a defense attorney and one who works as a plaintiff's attorney who specializes in IPRA. So they're going to begin to work and probably put together some kind of recommendations for the legislature to help fix these problems. And it's important. I know last year we had someone from FOG, the New Mexico Foundation for Open Government, to talk about the concerns of overly making it difficult, onerous, putting up excessive barriers, especially cost and fees for this. So we'll see. We'll be monitoring that to see what happens, and maybe we'll coming back to that next year based on their recommendations. So I just wanted to give a little update before we jump back into today's topic.
I appreciate mm-hmm. that. Can you talk a little bit about, as you're preparing for your role as moderator, what are you hoping to get out of this?
Yeah. I think as we were all, you know, kind of trying to parse the shooting last March and just how devastating that it was to the community and the loss of life as well as the community's sense of safety, how can we put together a panel that may be able to address this but still also talk about Sunshine Week? And so I think in some ways getting the Chief of Police Jeremy Story to come participate in this was a great thing, because he's been very active, he and his department, in putting out, a message that they want to have carried. And he's been very active in wanting to participate in the legislative process when he sees that it's not serving our community. At the same time, then, there are concerns about how that is being done. And I think the challenge for journalists in reporting about juvenile crime can be the laws that are in place that protect the identity of the youth, because we know that, when folks are younger, they tend to do things that could follow them throughout the rest of their life. And so those, we don't want to, ruin someone's life as it's just getting going. But there are serious crimes that youth are committing. And as an example number one, the three losses of life at the Young Park shooting. We've already had two of the trials that have taken place, and both were found guilty. And we have two more upcoming. But I think probably Jessica could probably talk a little bit more about how what are the challenges that journalists face when they are reporting on these kind of cases.
Sure. I'm happy to hop in there. I think one of the things to think about or to remember is journalists' role in all of this, and that is not only disseminating information, but giving it context, and then allowing our readers or whoever is consuming that media, whether it's broadcast, radio, newsprint, the opportunity to take that information and analyze it for themselves and make decisions about how they feel about things happening in their community. So bearing that in mind, when we approach any crime that has to do with the juvenile, there are certain internal standards that we must adhere to as well. But we have definitely found, and I think journalists across the state can agree with this, is when it comes to accessing publicly available records to help tell these stories or to just understand what happened, answer some of the big questions in our community, it has become somewhat difficult. And there's many reasons for that. There are laws that protect juvenile information when it comes to serious crimes. But also, I think that a lot of our investigative agencies here in Doñana County, it'd be the Sheriff's Office and the Police Department, the local police department, have found that they are willing to share the information they want to share via their social media accounts with the public. And so that avenue is open to them. They're welcome to take it. And as journalists, we struggle often to put that information in context for our readers. The other big part of this as well is just timeliness, right? Something terrible happens, like the shooting in Young Park in March, and people want to know, you know, what is happening right now? Is there any danger to us? Is there any danger to our children? How does this impact, you know, simple things like how does this impact me getting to work if I have to travel through this area? And oftentimes accessing that information can become very, very complicated. You're dealing with an agency that is trying to run an investigation, and so therefore feels it might be necessary to hold on to information rather than disperse it. But you're also, you know, you're also doing the investigation. So your time and your resources and your attention is elsewhere. As a journalist, I found that, you know, the public's expectation to know right now has to be balanced with what is publicly publicly available information at the moment.
I am curious, Jessica, about what you think about the timeliness of social media reportage compared with newspaper reportage, because when there have been significant incidents in Las Cruces especially, I find out I know more about who did what through social media than the newspapers are at least willing to report on, or the local television stations are willing to report on.
Right. So that's an excellent question. And I think that is a discussion about the journalism process. Social media has done many great things and many questionable things for our society and our community and for journalism itself. When it is used by official agencies, it's great, right? It's an avenue for them to connect directly with the community they serve. But it's also been used by those who are not familiar with journalism processes, who feel that it's okay to disseminate information without double-checking it, verifying it, sourcing it. And that is all part of the journalism process. So when you see something pop up on social media in an hour and then you see this venue publish something in two, it's because we're going through that process. It demands that we be accountable for what we publish, that we attribute where we got our information from, that we verify that it's accurate. And all of that takes time. All of that takes resources. And it's not only the truth for print media like the Sun News. It's the process that broadcast and radio go through as well.
Yeah, you're never going to beat the Community Watch for getting it up first.
<though. Yeah. laughs> That is correct. You are never going to beat the 411 page.
The other issue, though, in my opinion, not only is it the immediacy, but it's the fact that nothing ever dies. And so, you know, 15 years ago, we used to run police blotter, and it would be embarrassing for the person for a week or a day or whatever, but then it would go away. It would be, you know, somebody would have it on microfiche in the library if you wanted to go look it up. Now nothing ever goes away. And so everything you guys put is there forever, which certainly changed the way I looked at police blotter and mug shots and all of that kind of stuff.
There have been newsrooms, certainly ours, that have taken a step back and asked the question, does that really need to be public information? Should we be publishing, say, mug shots of every person who got picked up yesterday for whatever, on whatever charge? But I think maybe in this circumstance, a good example of how that information lives forever, right? In Yonge Park, there was directly after the shooting, there was a photo of a young man carrying a high-powered rifle in the park that was disseminating, and people were questioning whether or not he was involved with the incidents there. And it took some time for the police department to say, no, we've talked with him. We know he's not a part of this. Please let us conduct our investigation. So just to that point, that information lives out there. It's not always verified when it's shared, and that can cause, you know, real problems and sometimes lead to additional tragedies.
Yeah, I think I recall seeing different policing agencies having some kind of public forum or a news conference, and almost like half the time is spent debunking things that reporters are bringing up or seeing on social media.
Right.
And that's really interesting how quickly that has changed kind of reporting and how police departments operate. I want to bring up, one of the things that Police Chief Story has been advocating for is an amendment to the definition of what in New Mexico legal code is called the serious youthful offender. And so in the last legislative session, Senate Bill 165, Delinquency Act changes, sought to kind of redefine what the serious offender was, as well as to talk a little bit more about how sentencing would take place, and then how long these offenders would be within the juvenile system, even as they entered into adulthood. It didn't pass this year. It stalled out, I guess. There were a couple votes in the session, in committee, but it didn't pass. I assume they will be back again to try that. So I'm definitely looking forward to hearing from the police chief about, how he thought that political process went. But I know when you're redefining what, a juvenile to becoming an adult, then that changes what kind of information can be released.
Right.
And so I think, I don't know, I put you back on the spot, Jessica, but I know you were involved in a case in Carlsbad as a reporter where there was a young person who had, I think, murdered another younger person and that was being tried, and then the paper there sued for access to information that the police department was unwilling to give. I may be stating that incorrectly, but maybe you could talk about that.
Sure. So let me just clarify the record, as we journalists do. We did not sue for access. OMA and IPRA are beautiful in the fact that the Attorney General's office is empowered to enforce them, but also that they have a negotiation and mediation process when there is a dispute about what is and is not a publicly accessible record. So we took advantage of that avenue. But just some general background, in January 2025, we learned, I was then the editor of Carlsbad Current Argus down in Carlsbad at Eddy County, and serious youthful offender crimes, as we define them now, right, first-degree murder, they don't happen often there. Mm-hmm. When they do, they are cases of interest to our public. Everyone wants to know that their children are safe, and everyone wants to know about what impacts their children. So we heard about this case overnight, and what had happened was a 15-year-old boy had shot and ultimately killed another teenager, another high schooler in the region. And as most departments do, we got a press release from the Carlsbad Police Department with the barest of information. That's what we knew at the time, so that's what we published. But the next step in the journalism process, of course, is to ask, okay, what happened? What led to this shooting? What was the history between these two teens? Where did the gun come from? What has happened since then? So that information we typically source from public documents, arrest records, affidavits of criminal intent. So we asked the police department for this record. Now, some might feel a little swirl in their gut saying, wait, isn't juvenile information protected? Well, that was the question in this case. The city of Carlsbad responded to our request and said, thank you for your interest, but no, we believe that these documents, which gives the name, the age, details about the crime that happened, we believe these are protected under the Children's Code. And I think this is a case that kind of exemplifies that idea that oftentimes those who are entrusted and empowered with fulfilling the Inspection of Public Records Act don't really have a good handle on what is included there. That email came straight to me, and my first thought was, well, that's not right. So I reached out to the city attorney at the time, who was new to the city of Carlsbad, and I said, I don't believe that you're correct. The Children's Code does not apply in this case. IPRA firmly states that these records are public records and that we have a right to see them. And their response was just as quick. We don't believe that's correct. And so part of the mediation process, and I like to think that the avenue for litigation is there for anybody, whether you be a journalist or a member of the public, to ensure that these laws are being adhered to. But I also believe that mediation is a solid avenue as well. So we exchanged a few phone calls. We could not come to an agreement. And so my next move was to connect with the Attorney General's office and ask them to review both of our arguments. Before I got to that step, I called over to, for those of you who are not familiar with the Foundation for Open Government, it's a nonprofit in New Mexico who work as advocates to ensure that OMA and IPRA adhered to in all areas, and who help members of the public access information. But I reached out to them, and they have a sunshine lawyer, a great lawyer, Amanda Lavin. I spoke with Amanda. I said, hey, here's our stance. Here's what the city is saying. And she said, nope, that's not right. IPRA definitely says, and there is case law, previous case law, that says you have the right to access this information. So we sent our complaint up to the AG's office, and we waited quite a bit of time. It took about 6 months to resolve this issue. But to my surprise, I walk into the to the offices of the current Argus, and the reporter on the story, Adrian Hedden, was like, you will not believe what is in our inbox. The AG's office had read everything that we submitted and reviewed the position of the city and said, nope, Jessica, you do not have the right to access these laws, which was truly surprising. It was really, really surprising. Mm. We got in contact again with Amanda over at the Foundation for Open Government. We made another appeal to the AG's office, and lo and behold, the AG's office reversed its opinion. They said, hey, we reviewed this again. We don't think we were right the first time, and we now order the city of Carlsbad to turn over these documents. So it's, again, an example of how the law is explicit, but I think those who are interpreting it and applying it oftentimes find themselves in a position where they're not quite certain how it applies.
I'm just curious, in the meantime, if this took 6 months, whether your reporters interviewed the families or interviewed witnesses or, you know, sought to get information in some other way.
Yes, definitely. There are always other venues to information. For a case like this, it was highly emotional, involved very popular teenagers in our community, family, friends, the school district who was helping their students deal with the tragedy. Yes, definitely. But in the meantime, there is a silo of information when it comes to a criminal investigation that is often limited to the investigating agency. So that information is not something that you can get from a mother or a godparent, a family friend. And when you are limited by access, there are questions from your community that you can't answer, like, where did the gun come from that he used in this crime? Is anybody going to be held accountable for a juvenile having access to a loaded weapon? Why were these kids at a house party alone where there was potentially drugs and alcohol? So questions like that and information like that, there's only so many venues for information. And, you know, as a journalist, you want to be able to ensure that the story that you are telling is complete.
Dylan, you were talking earlier about a bill that you were following this year that didn't make it through. I actually, you know, did a quick search before today's show. Mm-hmm. None of the juvenile crime bills that were introduced this year were passed.
Right. Yeah.
And so I don't know. I suspect there's a little bit of lingering bad feelings between the governor and Democrats in the legislature on this issue. It's probably going to take a new leader, is kind of my sense. Do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that I'm an expert in this. I just use the legislative tracker available and just kind of see what the reports are and how it's going in the committee hearings and things. But I definitely am interested in seeing what Chief Story has to say about this, as well as beyond the efforts to redefine what a juvenile, delinquent is. What are his other thoughts? Because this surely can't be the only tactic that we take, right? We need to find spaces and avenues to divert young men, particularly away from these things. There's been an effort to try and tell people we need people who have legally purchased firearms need to do a better job at keeping those locked up safe, not just leaving them in their cars. That's kind of a shocking thing, how the Young Park when the chief police was talking about the shooting, that was one of the first things he was saying, is just like, people are just leaving their guns in their cars, and that's how a lot of these kids are getting access to those things. So I'll be interested to hear what other avenues, and I think the other speakers, Marie Esther and Bill, can kind of talk about that as well.
We should remind people once more that this is going to take place from 3 to 4 o'clock tomorrow at the NMSU Library. We're down to our last couple of minutes here. Jessica, I'll ask you first. Any final thoughts or anything we haven't asked that you think is important?
No, I just want to reemphasize something that Dylan mentioned at the opening of this, which was this legislative session. There was a move to create a task force that would take a look at OMA and IPRA, but to clarify, this task force is not empowered to change the language of the law, rather than to look at the processes that our local agencies and state agencies are going through to fulfill this request. We've seen data that shows that the amount of requests for public information are steadily increasing, and in many cases are well above the ability of those local agencies to fulfill. So I do think this is going to be an important work, and I'm looking forward to understanding ultimately what their suggestions are for addressing it.
And Dylan, same thing.
I guess I'm always excited to have a diverse group of people come together and have a discussion about a topic that's important to the community. I think oftentimes how often do people have – there'll be a Q&A portion of this event, and so here's an opportunity for folks to come in and ask questions of people who are working on this issue. Particularly, I'm interested to see the interaction between the police chief and the general public, because it seems like that he is very interested in having these kind of opportunities, and some of them have been crafted in other ways, but this is one that I was excited. He was very, very quick to say, yes, I will be there and look forward to the participation. So I'm just excited to have a general discussion about this.
Well, it is it's a great panel, and it ought to be a very interesting discussion. Once again, 3 to 4 tomorrow at the NMSU Library. Thank you both so much for joining us.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.